listening to the Head in the Clouds podcast, a proud member of the Converge Podcast Network. Now to the man with his head constantly in the clouds, your host, Ryan Romeo.
That is right, English announcer lady. This is the Head in the Clouds podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you get your dream off the ground. My name is Ryan Romeo. Welcome. Today, I'm going to be playing a message that I gave at the Creative Church Conference. And it was a completely online conference. It was really awesome. The owner, Nick Goodner, put it all together. It was really great. The handle is Creative Church, CRTV Church on Instagram. I definitely recommend going and giving it a follow. Check out what they've got. But it's a really great conference. It was really fun to do. But I spoke on becoming a doer, moving from being a dreamer to a doer. It's something we all deal with. So without further ado, here's my message at the Creative Church Conference. Hello, Creative Church Conference. I am so happy to be with you today. I am so glad to be here. Well, I'm here in my office in Phoenix, Arizona. So I'm not here with you, but I'm here, I'm here with you, and it's this kind of brave new world that we're in. Second time I've spoken at an all digital conference, and we're in this brave new world where we are all hiding in our houses. And this is just where we're at, and it's great, and it's awesome, and I love the fact that we're starting to open up technology, that we're starting to do things a little bit more creatively. And when Nick reached out to me to speak to you guys, I was really excited. I love creativity. I am a huge fan, and I'm going to kind of dive into my life a little bit more, and we'll talk through some things. But I really do value creatives in the church. I went to graphic design school. I graduated with a degree from U of A in graphic design. I ran my own business for a little while doing graphic design and web design. And now I oversee the creative arts at my church here in Central Phoenix. And I oversee worship, production, video, communications, graphic design, photography. Anything creatively that's going on at our church falls under my purview. And we're not a giant church. We're a church of about 1,000 adults and a couple hundred kids, 300 or 400 kids. And so a decent sized church. But we're in the fray every week, doing creative work. And I know this because I've been a part of enough churches to know you guys are not appreciated enough as creatives. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for spending those late nights making those videos for Sunday morning. Thank you for making the graphic design and the lighting look great so that your pastor looks great. These are things that when you're really doing your job, nobody really notices. And it's hard because when you're doing it great, everyone goes, hey, it's awesome. Cool. And nobody writes a comment card and says, hey, you did excellent today. And maybe some people do, but it's very rare. It's far more critics out there than there are encouragers. But in this world, in this digital world that we are in right now, you guys are vital. You are pushing the kingdom forward, and not with your onstage personality. You're pushing the kingdom forward with your behind the scenes creativity. And that is so vital in this season. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the time that you've put in, the tireless nights that you've put in to make your church look, sound, feel great. And I know that it's a difficult road to walk in as a creative. A little bit about me. My claim to fame is my friend and I started a tour called Outcry. Outcry was a tour that talked about the unity of the church, power of the local church. We went out with groups like Hillsong United and Passion and Jesus Culture and Bethel and Carrie Job. And we took risk year one on a new singer named Lauren Daigle. We've had a lot of people come through. We've had Stephen Furtick and Chris Kane speak on Outcry. And so it's been this kind of crazy thing that's happened. And And really, we've done about 90 cities. We've seen almost 1 million people attend Outcry. We've seen about 50,000 people give their life to Jesus. And I was a creative director. Yes, I was a co-founder of it. And I would speak on stage about the passion and vision behind Outcry. But I, behind the scenes, ran the creative direction of the night. And it was such a challenge. It's such a challenge to bring in all these heavy hitters. It's like you're bringing in Elevation and Hillsong, these guys that are amazingly creative. And then I would have to produce video content that would wrap around what they were doing. I had to try to think through the flow of the night so that it wasn't just like Bethel sponsorship, you know, Hillsong sponsorship. I didn't want it to feel like that. And there was a little bit of that because, you know, you got to pay the bills. But I tried really hard to create a creative flow in the night. And so because of Outcry, there's been a lot of opportunities that have come my way. And I wrote a book called Outcry in 2015, which I, as a visual creative, I never thought that I would write a book. I dreamed, you know, maybe one day I'd write a book, but I didn't go to graduate school and hadn't written long form anything before. And to look at writing 50,000 words was really daunting. And so wrote the Outcry book, 2016, maybe actually, I don't know. And came out with that. And then I just recently came out with a book called Head in the Clouds, Feet on the Ground, a survival guide for creatives, visionaries, and dreamers. I had to read the subtitle because my publisher wrote it. Survival guide for creatives, visionaries, and dreamers. But that is the thing that I've been talking a lot about lately, dreaming. Believing that God gives big dreams, believing that God wants you to pursue these big dreams, understanding that dreams are an investment into us. That parable of the talents that Jesus talks about, when he invests something into you, he invests a creative idea into you, he invests vision and dreams and passions into you that nobody else has. You are insanely unique, and what you bring to the table is unlike anybody else. And yes, it might look similar to other people, but what you bring to the table is uniquely your own. And when you understand that, you look at your dreams, your visions, and your passions as an investment from the Lord. And in the parable of the talents, it could go two ways. One, you sit in front of Jesus and he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You took the investment that I gave into you, and you multiplied it for the good of the kingdom. You invested it into places that gave Jesus a return on his investment." And that's not only how he looks at you. He looks at you as a son and all of that stuff. But there's this other side to him where he's going, do not waste your dreams. Do not waste your talents. Do not waste your vision. And expect that I'm going to go, great job. You buried all your dreams, visions, and passions that I invested in you because of fear of man. And now you're entering heaven and I'm happy about it. No, Jesus gives this really hard parable, and I wish he said it nicer. But for the people for the one guy who buried his talent in the backyard, was too afraid to invest what God gave him, he says, "You wicked and lazy servant." And we do not want to be wicked and lazy servants. We want to be the faithful servant. So today, that's a long setup for our talk today, but today I'm going to talk about going from being a dreamer to a doer. There are very few of us that make that leap. And I think a lot of people, when they're familiar with Outcry, or they see, you know, I spit out all these big statistics and it's like, oh man, doesn't that sound awesome? What you don't see is the years that led up to that. So let me go back to the beginning. When I started in graphic design, I felt like the Lord was calling me to it. I was young. I had just gotten married. It was my early 20s. And I went into art school not really knowing what I was going to do. But I hit a point where, you know, I'm going to all these classes and they're talking about, you know, like the history of art, the history of typography, and like why we love Helvetica and we hate Arial, you know. I was diving into the deep minutia of graphic design and art, and I loved it. I learned how to critique art. I learned about the history of things. I learned about, you know, how to make art that says something, not just looks good, but is saying something, taking creative risk, being able to put your work in front of other people and have them critique it. That is not easy for most creatives. And I learned all that stuff in art school. What I did not learn was what to do after art school. I did not learn, how do you make a living doing this? How do you, you know, how do you take what you've learned here and actually start paying your mortgage with it? You know, like, I did not learn those kind of things from art school. And so I started to think, you know what, if I'm going to have any chance at making it as a graphic designer, I'm going to have some clients with some notoriety. And I would go onto my favorite band websites or, you know, worship leader websites, and I would see on the corner, like in the bottom, like designed by this, you know, this person. And I knew that I needed something like that to give me some exposure. That was about all I knew. And this is the time, early 2000s, Flash is still a thing before Steve Jobs declared it dead. Design was like, for websites, was animated, and there was sound and there was music and there was rollover things. And there was just so much to it. You know, now it's far more utilitarian. It's like, it's got to make sense on our phones now, you know, but at the time there was a lot more emphasis on the creativity that you could do with animation and things like that with websites. And so I wrote a real simple email to probably about 20 people. And I said, "Hey, my name is Ryan Romeo. I'm a graphic designer and web designer," which was totally debatable at the time. And I said, "I don't know who's doing your graphic design or web design, but I would love an opportunity to do it and to be your guy." And so I sent it out to all these people. And a couple days later, I got one response, and it was from David Crowder. And Crowder said, "Hey, if you come up with some ideas, I'll look at them." Which is so funny. Like, now that I think back on it, I'm like, it was so non-committal. It was just kind of like a, "Hey, all right, thanks for offering. Thanks for being so bold. You know, come up with some ideas. We'll look at it." And it was the first time that I was going, okay, I got to do something here. And I built this little rule in my head. I said, you know, I've got 1 week. I've got David Crowder's attention. I've got 1 week, and I am going to work my butt off to create a web design for David. So sat in, I was going on forums, I was copying, pasting code, I was animating things. And at the time he had an album out called Remedy, which was like this kind of green and white album with these illustrations in the corner. And so I scanned it, you know, back when he had scanners, and I scanned it. I took the animations out. I made vector illustrations out of them. I animated them so that when you came into the website, these green animations came up. And like, the coup de grace for me was that on the back of the album, there was this kind of fanned out picture of all the Crowder band guys. And it's really off the wall and crazy, just, you know, like Crowder. And I put a little button on the bottom that says "The Band." And when you rolled over "The Band," that image would pop up. Oh, I just hit the mic. Sorry. That image would pop up, and it was crazy looking. And then you could roll over David or, you know, whatever. And you could see their like personal information. And I worked probably till 2 or 3 in the morning every day that week, just working hard. My wife would get home. She was an elementary school teacher, and I'd be on my laptop and I'd be like, "Hey, you know," eyes red from, you know, copying and pasting code all day. Finally, I send it to him and I get an email back and he says, "We love it. It's awesome." And the next email I get is from Shelly Giglio from 268. She's going, "Hey, welcome to the team. You know, here's all the info. Here's the, you know, non-disclosures, things like that." I was like, okay, all right, I'm diving in. And I worked real hard, and I had to teach myself a lot. I did not know what I thought I knew about web design. And, but I took that creative risk. I really dove in and said, And I took some creative risk, ran down and said, okay, this is my moment to shine with Crowder. And as I stepped into it, it was like more and more opportunities started to open up, more and more things started to happen for me. And one day I got a call from a young worship leader, and she was like, "Hey, I saw what you did with Crowder, and you know, can you do some work for me on this new album, on my first album and my first website?" And her name was Carrie Jobe, and started working with Carrie when she was young. And there were just all these different things that started to add up. And one day Crowder called me, and he said, "Hey, we're putting on a conference called Crowder's Fantastical Church Music Conference in Waco, Texas. And would you just kind of, you know, do graphic design and oversee kind of the creative stuff for the conference?" And I said, "Absolutely." So he said, "There's a guy that's running the kind of behind the scenes for it, and his name is Shane Quick. He's the production lead on it. And why don't you work with him?" So Shane and I started emailing back and forth. We had some calls, and I'm sitting in my little condo in, you know, in Tucson, Arizona. I had met Crowder in person one time at this point. Like, I'm not in the Bible Belt. I'm not in Nashville. There's no reason why I should be working in the Christian music industry. And so I fly out to Fantastical, and that conference was just crazy. It was off the wall. It was all these people. It's like, we would have the Civil Wars there, and Paper Route was there, but Leland would be leading worship, and Hillsong would be leading worship, and you know, Louis Giglio would be preaching, and all of this stuff was just this crazy, crazy season for me. And because of meeting Shane, I started to get into the production world just a little bit more. And right about that time too, though, the problem was 2009 hit, and it was like the stock market crash. And so my business started to do kind of bad. You know, I was still doing some work for people that I was really impressed by, but it was not paying the bills. And so I got a job with my dad working in manufacturing. And that to me was just like slow death. And so I started working with him, and I learned a lot in that season. But one day Shane called me and he said, "Hey, this is Shane Quick." And it's so funny. This is a couple of years later, and I got his call, and I was like, "Shane Quick, that sounds so familiar, you know?" And Shane and I started talking. He said, "Hey, I want to do a worship leader conference called Outcry." And at this time, that's where we were like kicking around. And he said, "You know, I started this thing called Outcry in my hometown, but I'm thinking, you know, we're going to do something different with it." And I started going off on, you know, these big events are so cool, but the problem is for creatives, they start to be really discouraging, because you show up to something that's massive and you're like, "I'll never be able to do that. I'll never have the budget. I'll never have, you know," like, we need an event that, sure, it does that really big stuff, but makes the people that show up feel like the real heroes, you know. When they show up, we need to be telling them, "Hey, you're part of a local church. It's the greatest movement in history. There's nothing like the local church," you know? And Shane and I had like an hour-long conversation. And he said, "I just started working with a new group called Jesus Culture. Why don't you come out to LA and let's talk?" And there was years and years of us meeting and dreaming. And I would be writing things up. And one of the things is, and we would dream, and we'd go, "Man, what if we did this? What if we did that?" And we had 1,001 different ideas. But what you have to understand is that the dreaming itself is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But there are very, very few people that actually start moving on them. And so my challenge as a creative was, I would sit with Shane. We would dream about all these things for like 2 days. We'd have all these conversations with, you know, people like Chris Kilala or, you know, people from Hillsong, and great, great conversations about what if we did this, what if we did that. But the challenge was, you have to be able to get it down on paper. And the number one thing, and there's really three things I want to talk about today, and I know I'm 20 minutes in before I hit my 3 points, but you need to be prepared. So I would go through all these dreaming sessions, and I would take all of our ideas and I would boil them down onto what people in the business world call an elevator pitch. So I'd take our ideas and everything, and maybe I'd clarify, I'd call them back, and we'd text back and forth. But I'd boil it all down and go, okay, what's the vision in like a sentence or two at the most? What's a little bit more of an expanded vision, you know, that's maybe like a paragraph. People want a little bit more information. And then what's our time frame? What's our budget? You know, who do we want on this tour? And then I would design a poster, and I kid you not, I have all these fake Outcry posters that we never did anything with, but I'd design this poster and go, you know, we're going to have Hillsong and Ren Collective and all these people there. And I'd put this big list of people there. I would do one of them. I hand illustrated the entire thing. Never saw the light of day. It was just part of this creative doing that I knew I needed to do. And we would pitch ideas in front of people, and sometimes they wouldn't get it. Or they'd go, I don't think that's going to work. And when you're prepared, you have to understand, and this is what's so hard for creatives to understand, you are not entitled to someone else's excitement about your idea. I'm going to say that one more time. You are not entitled to someone else's excitement about your idea. If they're not excited about your idea, then you didn't communicate it well. Then you didn't get it across well. Maybe you dove too much into the budget and everything else, and you didn't slow down and paint the picture of what this thing is going to look like. Maybe you don't know what it looks like, and you start pitching it, you know, when you have a really rough idea, and people are like, I don't understand what you're talking about, you know. And you need to know that is a refining process for you to go back and, you know, clean your wounds and then get back into it. So you got to know that you're not entitled to someone else's excitement. So when Shane and I would come up with all these ideas, we'd sit down in front of people and we would put it in front of them and say, what do you think of this? And some of them were just like, I don't think that's going to work. They're like, there's no way Bethel's going to go on tour with Hillsong. There's just no way that's going to work. There's no way that, you know, whatever. You can fill in the blank and they're just like, it's not going to happen. There's no way you can have people show up to an event and make them feel empowered and not feel smaller if it's really big. And we would hear all this feedback, and sometimes it was like, okay, I got to listen to that, or, you know, maybe I don't need to listen to that. But you have to be prepared for that moment. It's like, if somebody asks you, what's your dream? And you're like, oh man. And you go off on an hour long tangent where you hit 18 different things. That's not casting vision. If somebody says, hey, you know, I know you're a dreamer personality. What kind of dreams do you have? And you go, hey, let me show you. And you pull out a one sheet piece of paper and you go, hey, this is what I'm dreaming. How much more apt is somebody to look at that and go, oh man, this person is prepared. They're ready. They're ready to expand on it. If I ask hard questions, they're ready to go. You have to be prepared as a dreamer for those little moments.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
You guys, it was like 4 or 5 years before our very first Outcry date. From the moment Shane and I had that call to actually taking Outcry on the road, it was about 4 or 5 years of a lot of hard work and me spending money that my wife and I didn't have to go fly out and meet. Like a lot of time went into it. And then at the end of the day, I would go through a lot of disappointment. And this is the second point for us today. We have to anticipate the hard road. We have to anticipate the hard road. So 4 or 5 years of dreaming with Outcry, you don't think there were moments where I sat back and was like, Ryan, you're such a fool to keep dreaming about this. You don't think there was people in my life that were like, really? This? You're still on this, you know? Especially by the time I was 30, it's like people are going, you still want to do a worship tour? You know, like, aren't you a little bit old to be dreaming about that? You know, you got 3 kids now. And there was a lot of that, a lot of moments where I felt like, okay, God, there really were times where, and Shane and I were connected, but there were really a lot of times where I was like, okay, Lord, I guess it's just me and you, you know, and my wife, She believed that I was a dreamer. She believed that I would work hard, but she hadn't seen it yet. And I always knew. She's kind of like, okay, Ryan, you know, like, when is this going to happen? You know, and as a dreamer, you have to be prepared for that hard road. You have to know it's not going to be easy. There's going to be seasons where you feel like you're alone, where you're lonely, where nobody cares, where nobody understands. But that's okay. That's right. And even when a dream gets off the ground, I'll fast forward to that. So when Outcry got off the ground, it was not easy. I worked late nights for about a month before Outcry. I was like producing video. I was flying out and meeting with Bethel's team and who was helping us. One of the guys from Bethel that was helping us do videography. And once or twice we had to pull the plug because the video just wasn't quite right. And it wasn't necessarily their fault. I just realized my vision casting was not as strong as I thought it was. And I started getting into copywriting and I wrote our first video for Outcry and realized I needed to come to the table with a creative vision. Even if I was working with a big team like Bethel, it was like, I still need to be able to be the one that's coming up with the vision here. And I learned a lot of those hard lessons. And I had worked so, so hard. And by the time I flew out to the very first Outcry, I was exhausted and tired. I had never been on the road. And I got on the bus in Nashville. We drove to Chicago overnight, you know, and took a little longer than overnight, but drove to Chicago. And we had our very first night in Chicago. And Outcry night one, we had 12,000 people show up. And we had this the smallest team. I was looking around going, my team at church is bigger than this. This is insane. And I was stressing and running around like a chicken with my head cut off. And I had produced video content. I had produced all of our countdowns. I had produced every little bit of what we were doing. And then I would be running, you know, video or in between the different artists, I was running music. And some of the music I chose was worship band music that you know, had just played. And some of the producers came to me and was like, what is this playlist? This is a terrible playlist. It's playing Passion music. And we just heard Passion sing the song. And I was going, I didn't know that was a rule. And I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off. And I remember my wife and kids were there. And I kept running up to them, you know, in the kind of VIP room. And I kissed them and I go, hey guys, how's it going? And the night was going really bad and we were going really long. We were running up against a hard deadline and I had to run to every artist and say, can you cut 5 or 10 minutes out of your set? Can you cut 5 or 10 minutes out of your set? And I was making, you know, artists that I really look up to, frustrated. And I was going, oh Lord, this is hard. And I was feeling this emotion build up. Hillsong United's out on there on stage and we have a hard deadline. So in Chicago, outdoor venue, they go, you have to stop at 11 p.m. on the nose, no grace at all. And we will shut your power down if you go any longer. And so Hillsong United's out on stage. And at the time, the song they're singing, oh, what was that song? Oh, I don't know if you guys remember that song. And the crowd is singing and Joel Houston's out there and they're singing. Taya's out there, huge. And I'm looking at the clock going, they have like 15 seconds before we have to shut them down. And everybody's singing and cheering and Hillsong looks over at us and their clock hits zero and we're like, you're all done. So they all get off stage and the entire crowd is still chanting, whoa, oh. And what they didn't know is Hillsong can't come back out on stage. We're done for the night. We're completely done. Hillsong comes off and I could tell they're really frustrated because they were at the end and they had to cut time out and we just didn't manage time well. Our stage hands weren't great. Our stage manager wasn't, you know, top notch and there was just so much going on. And my wife came up to me and she said, hey, we're going home. And so they were going home and I was finishing out the rest of the tour. And I just remember crying and I hugged her and I was just like, just broken. And I missed my kids. I was so frustrated that the night didn't go well. And it's that night where, you know, those kind of nights where we've all been there, where it's like, I failed tonight and I embarrassed myself tonight. And I had the unique new experience of saying, I embarrassed myself in front of all my heroes too. And, you know, when my wife and kids went home, I just was crying and was so broken down. And throughout that tour, there were so many times where I just would cry and would be so sad about what was going on and how things were going, and so overwhelmed and not sleeping and trying to sleep on a bus, you know, for 2 weeks. And it was really, really hard. And I never really had anybody tell me, hey, pursuing a dream is going to be the hardest thing you ever do in your life. Yes, the Lord's with you. Yes, his yoke is easy and his burden is light, but it's going to be really, really hard. And I just, you know, it's one of those things that I will tell you, I know it's kind of a downer thing to say, but if you start stepping out into God-given dreams, it's going to be really hard, but you will start to become a leader and a visionary like you've never believed you could be. And after year one of Outcry, I started learning, going, we need somebody else running this. I am not going to be editing video late at night anymore. I started saying these things that I was doing before, we need to hire out. And fast forward a couple of tours later, you know, and we were 60 cities into Outcry at that point. And, you know, we'd been going for a couple of years and done a few different runs, and I knew what I was doing. And I could sleep better and I wasn't overwhelmed and my family could come out on tour. And there were a lot of things that got a lot easier for me as I went on. But I had this thing that hit me. And in the middle of me breaking down, I was like, God, I could pray two different prayers right now. One, that you make this easier for me. Or two, that you make me a stronger leader that can handle more than I thought I could. And I started praying the latter thing. I started saying, hey, you know, I want to be this kind of leader. And this is our third and last point. When you're stepping out and taking a dream off the ground, you have to take risk. You have to take that risk on yourself and say, hey, I may not feel equipped right now, but I believe that I'm going to become a better leader as this goes on. I may feel completely insecure and unable to move forward because this risk looks too great, or this change in career looks too scary, or this, you know, meeting this person, going out of my way to go try to meet with this person and pitch in an idea or try to raise money for it feels like it's too much for me. And at some point you have to realize it is too much for you. It's too much for the version of you that you are experiencing right now. But there's an upgraded version of yourself. There's this new version of yourself that as you take risk, as you anticipate the hard road, as you're prepared to step out, as you start moving and moving from a dreamer to a doer, as you take something off the ground, you are not ready before that happens. God does not say, I'm going to wait till you're all locked and loaded, and then I'm going to move you into this scary role. God goes, you are not equipped for it, and I'm going to slam you into this new role, and then you will learn. And you're going to fail, and then you're going to learn, and then you're going to fail again, and then you're going to learn some more. And you have to know that that is part of a very beautiful journey with God. It's a journey of trusting him more. It's a journey of unearthing proper identity in yourself. There was times in Outcry where I remember one time in particular where I was standing backstage. And we would lead these backstage times with all these guys, Hillsong and all these guys, you know, it was really intimidating for me. And I remember I was standing there and I was praying, and we would pull everybody together. And I remember Taya and JD from Hillsong were leading worship for us acoustically. And it was in St. Louis. Don't ask me why I remember that. I just remember we were in St. Louis. And I was sitting there, and you know, it's like you get into that worship mode with people where they're, you know, kind of strumming on the acoustic guitar, and you finish a song, they finish singing a song, and they'd been strumming on the acoustic guitar for a little while. And I had this burning feeling of like, Ryan, open your eyes. And I opened my eyes, and JD was just like staring daggers into me. And he was looking me right in the eye, and he just did this little motion, and he was strumming guitar, and he went. And in that moment, I didn't realize that I was leading that room until he did that. And he was looking at me like, what now? And I stepped forward, and I was like, Lord, you know, something or other, you know, just some weird prayer. And there was another night that was kind of like that with Carrie and Lauren Daigle, and just these little moments where I realized, God, you're calling me to lead back here. And I don't understand why, because all these people have albums out, all these people I look up to, why are you calling me to do that? And I had to learn to be confident in the calling of God, not in my own ability. I had to be confident, not in myself, but in my calling. And as you do that, as you take risk, as you anticipate the hard road, and as you're prepared to move forward, you start to realize that there is a version of you that you didn't understand. There's a version of you that you didn't quite see, or maybe you saw it off in the distance and you're like, gosh, I know I kind of have this potential, but I've never seen it done. And maybe you've had voices of people telling you, it's not gonna work. You've had voices of critics in your life knocking you down. You have to move beyond that, get to the point where you go, okay, Lord, I want to see myself the way that you see me. I want to see the giftings, talents, visions, passions that you've poured into me as an investment that I am called to invest back into the kingdom for a return on your investment, Lord. And that is a game changer for us dreamers. When we don't just look at our dream, and we're not just satisfied with late night conversations with our friends and family about what if we did this and what if we did that, but we move beyond that and actually start doing. Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you for these creatives that are listening right now. I thank you for the dreams and passions that they have. And God, I pray that you would remind them of how unique they are. I pray that you'd remind them that you have a calling on their life unlike anybody else in history, unlike anybody else that will live on earth. There is something unique for them to walk in. And I pray that they would really trust you. That this next move, that as they start doing, as they start dreaming, that you would start to show them this next step, God. Maybe you're not showing them the whole plan, but you're at least showing them this next step. And God, I pray that we would be a people that don't just create in our minds, but we create with our hands. We truly move from being dreamers to doers for your kingdom. And I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you guys so much. If you want to follow me, jump on Instagram at Ryan Romeo. I also have a podcast, Head in the Clouds. You could just search it wherever you listen to podcasts. We talk about this sort of stuff, you know, taking dreams off the ground, and I dive deep into that. And then finally, the Head in the Clouds book, it's on Amazon. Forward was written by my friend Phil Wickham, and it's just a survival guide. We talk about all the pitfalls that can happen as you're pursuing God-given dreams. But yeah, thank you, Creative Church. Thank you, Nick, for inviting me. Have a good day.
Listening to Head in the Clouds with Ryan Romeo. For more information about this show, visit convergepodcastnetwork.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.